Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. I'll remind you on the way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. One of my favorite pieces of music is being performed by the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. And one of my favorite musical scholars and musicians and leaders of music is helping that happen. That's Eric Conway, director of the Morgan State University Choir and chairperson of Morgan State University's Fine Arts Department. Eric, great to see you.
Hey, good morning.
Always. Two of his students here, both graduates. Colin Lett, who just graduated with his master's degree.
Yes, sir.
In music here at Morgan State University. And Leah Hawkins with her bachelor's degree.
Yes.
Congratulations to both of your degrees.
Thank you.
And being here. And we're going to try to play this piece of music right now. The computer's frozen. They're working to unfreeze it. So let's hope it unfreezes. Because this piece of music is just, I know they, when they wrote about it in the same, they called it infamous. I would never call this piece infamous.
But it's certainly it's iconic.
It's iconic.
Oh, yes. It's a part of our popular culture. You go up to a person on the street and say, "Do you know Carmina Burana?" And they say, "What's a Carmina Burana?" But then you play the...
What sandwich is that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I want that with fries.
Right.
but then you play the opening passage and say, "Oh, yeah, the nod. Yes. Oh, yeah, I've heard this a million times." It's arguably the most recorded piece of classical music ever.
The most recorded piece?
Yes. Certainly the most popular classical piece of the 20th century.
So let's talk about the piece. And hopefully we can get this thing on the air. I want people to hear it. They'll know what we're talking about. But it is a piece of music that was rediscovered. Carl Orff kind of created this piece around it. But it's rediscovered 13th, 12th century European music. And the wild thing about this piece, Eric, and please describe this, is that this is not a piece that was just written in one part of Europe. This, like, they found pieces from all over Europe that came in to create this. This is an amazing piece.
Well, certainly a word to describe it might be eclectic.
Yeah.
There are many different types of styles in the piece. It's a true spectacle. It requires three soloists, full orchestra, and an orchestra with two pianos. I used to play the BSO, and it's the only piece I ever had where there were two pianos with the orchestra. And of course, a chorus. And to throw in a children's chorus on top of that. You know, if you want them to come, put some children in the show. But again, it's an incredible piece for chorus. In fact, choruses would think, of course, as Handel Messiah or Beethoven 5. But this is right up there with it. If you truly love choral music, this is a piece that you have to sing in your career.
And it's got deep percussion in it and cymbals in it and...
Oh, a very large orchestration. Yes.
Huge.
Yes, a huge battery of percussionists. Again, there's actually a version, maybe performed a little more with two pianos and percussion. But again, if you don't have the budget to perform with a full symphony orchestra. But however, this is still incredibly performed. There are more recordings of this, like I said, than any other piece. And
that's interesting.
Yes.
What's your favorite recording of this? Do you have one that you think is...
Well, there's one at the Atlanta Symphony, which I think is quite extraordinary.
Symphony.
Yes, Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw.
Yeah.
But you're directing the choral aspect of this.
Yes.
And Marin Alsop is directing the orchestra?
Yes.
Conducting the orchestra,
yes.
I should say. So tell me about welcome to the studio. Always good to have these brilliant young Morgan graduates here in our studio. So talk about this piece to you, and what are you doing in this piece?
Well, we are, as we said, the chorus for the piece, or the primary chorus. I didn't enjoy the piece at first. I was thinking when Dr. Conway announced to the choir that we were doing Carmina Burana, I said, "Oh, great! We'll be able to sing the music that's on all of the movie commercials."
Right.
but I didn't feel it at first when we were just in our choral rehearsals. But when we got to the first orchestral rehearsal is when I really started to understand how it all tied together because of the different colors and the instrumentations that that Carl Orff provided in the piece, which made it really, really stand out to me.
Yeah, without a doubt, the piano can't capture all the majesty of the piece. And for the chorally speaking, it's a lot of work. there's much text. Text in a language, of course, that is considered dead, Latin. We don't speak it anymore.
Right.
But much, much text. So because you're cerebrally on the other side of performing this, thinking about every word, so it's not as enjoyable as some other pieces where you just sing beautiful line.
But not just enjoyable. That's an interesting way to put it, not as enjoyable. What do you mean by that?
Not as because you're because there's so much text, it's so precise, it goes as many of the movements go so quickly that you're on your edge and much of the piece, making sure that everything is lining up directly with the orchestra.
So, and what was your experience during this piece?
Well, I found it interesting that most of what we, as singers, we sing a lot of sacred music and a lot of sacred Latin texts. And to sing, you know, secular Latin texts was interesting.
And satirical at that of the church and religion as well.
Right. Right. And to sing about being inebriated in Latin, that was, it's a really cool experience to see that and to experience that.
Yeah, this piece was created by monks in the 12th, 13th centuries, the text. However, these weren't just ordinary monks, very pious. No. These were monks who also knew what they were giving up and had a dark side and celebrated that dark side in the text.
The
dark side, the lustful side.
The
excuse
lustful
me.
Side. Not necessarily dark, but lustful.
Yes. Yes.
So, but that was part of the power of this piece, and it's kind of is that it is, it's the lustful part, but it's the other side of it as well, and it's the battle between the two in some ways.
Oh
that
yes.
Goes on in this piece.
Yes. Yes. After the opening chorus, we have some almost Gregorian chant like melodies. That and for my choir, chorally speaking, I have to tell chorally, you're supposed to speak as straight tone, as sing as straight tone as you can, to create that that humility, and then later on there are some huge huge singing where again my choir can really open up in all their glory with their sound.
Well, this is not the choir from Morgan doing this piece, but let's cue up just people can hear what we're talking about. The computer is unfrozen, magic of our people behind the glass here. Let's make the magic work. This is just the opening. This is the famous opening, but it's so much more complex and nuanced as it goes through.
It's interesting. The initial chorus is talking about life as a wheel of fortune. And, of course, as the old adage, is it better to be good or lucky? Of course, it's better to be good, but we all know that there are some great people out there who maybe didn't get the breaks that they needed. So, yes, in many ways, you have to be fortunate. Fortune not in necessarily the riches, but fortune as an opportunity.
So what did it take to actually do this for you all? I mean, this is a bit different than you were talking about earlier, alluding to that earlier. This is different than other pieces you've done.
Well, yeah, it takes a lot of rehearsal and a lot of focus on language and a lot of focus in general. It's not necessarily hard music, but putting it together with the language can be a little bit difficult. And then putting it together with the orchestra.
Many of the tunes are actually almost folk-like.
Right, and that's why it goes. It just goes all over the place in terms of musical style.
Yes,
which is why this is such a lovely piece to listen to. You never get bored listening to this entire long, long series of pieces. Did you all read? You sang it in the original language in the text, but did you read the English translation?
I did. One of the solos I sang, I sang in Trutina, and it's speaking. It's almost speaking about a nun who is trying to choose between love or chastity, love and chastity. So it's
wow.
So yeah, it covers a
you
range.
Sing that part.
Yeah. And so it covers, you know, the whole piece covers a range of topics. So, you know, it talks about love. It talks about springtime. It talks about fortune. It talks about being drunk in the tavern. So is this
in Latin or is this in
Latin? And there's some like middle high German or something.
Yes, it's very interesting. Again, eclectic, not just Latin, but again, this was in the poems were songs of Bavaria. So again, in the local dialect in German, there's some German text as well.
I mean, so this is the kind of power of this piece to me was always because it's continent wide. We said earlier, this. Mm-hmm. Do we know the history of how that happened? How it was kind of pulled in from all these points in Europe? Nobody really knows, do they?
No, I wouldn't say. I mean, it's just one composer just taking the songs of Bavaria, the text, and then making a libretto out of it. Let me just tell you, we did this to really try to whip my choir into shape. We performed this on our spring concert for Sunday in May. And what I did was we used super text. That is, while there's so much text here, and it's, you know, of course you can enjoy music just for the musical value of the melody. However, the text is so integral to this piece. So as every Latin text word was sung, we had above the chorus the English translations. Mm. And that's for the audience goers much more engaging because, one, it forces you to read. But two, as you hear the music and you can actually see what the composer was trying to depict musically through the words that he was using. And again, there was one piece where in the tavern where the text goes so fast about drinking. I just pulled this up here. Quickly it says about drink, the mistress drinks, the master drinks, the soldier drinks, the priest drinks, the servant drinks, the swift man drinks, the lazy man drinks, the white man drinks, the black man drinks, the settled man drinks, the wanderer drinks, the poor man drinks, the sick man drinks, the boy drinks, the girl drinks, just everything. This is very text, but you would not get that because it's in Latin,
right.
You know, in a concert. But to see the text go, and people just chuckling as they see the text along the way. It's a different experience.
How does that affect you?
Well, I'm actually a minister. Uh-huh. So can you imagine a minister on stage? I just hope my church doesn't kick me out.
Hey, wine.
Behind closed doors, I guess.
couldn't resist that. I'm sorry. So essentially, part of the text you just read said white men drink, black men drink.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is 12th century.
Yes, yes. Well, they're different.
13th century.
Yes, they're just different peeps. They're different people in the world, and everyone, that's a sin of the flesh.
Because what's interesting to me is that when we don't realize this, did you see the exhibit was at the Walters a few months back about Africans in the Renaissance?
Yeah, sure.
And so it was always this kind of African influence at some level or another in different parts of Europe, but we never give credence to that. During our looking at history in Europe.
Yes.
But that one line made
Exactly. Yes, yeah. And there were blacks in Europe in the 12th century, yeah. Right. How about that?
So how many times have you done this piece?
This is the first time we've ever sung this. Well, let me go back. This is a university choir, so ideally every 4 or 5 years you have a new choir. So even if we've done it a few decades ago, this would be new for this current choir. I think there was a contingent of our choir that did this with Cora Arts about 20 years
ago. Tom Halsted.
Yeah. Yes, uh-huh. yes. However, this is the first time we've ever attempted this piece, and the first time for me as a choir director that I've taught the piece. So this was...
So two quick questions. I have 2 minutes left here.
Sure.
And maybe we can play that. Let's play the music under us very lowly, slightly, so people can hear it as we go out and tell you how to get tickets as well. So what is it like for you all to perform at the BSO?
Amazing.
Baltimore City Orchestra. Just being on
simply amazing.
And you're going to be – I'm sorry.
And just to be able to sing under the baton of Marin Alsop is just extraordinary.
And are you both soloing?
No, sir.
So you're soloing on stage.
No, I solo with Morgan State Choir.
Oh, yes. Morgan State Choir, but not on stage on this one.
No. Okay. One day.
You will. I'm sure you will. But this is just amazing. And I want to tell folks that please, you can join this. The event is June 6th to the 9th.
Correct. 6th at Strathmore.
and
7th through 9th at the Meyerhof.
At the Meyerhof. And the fabulous Morgan State University Choir performs this masterpiece, Carmina Burana, with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, along with the Peabody Children's Chorus. More information on tickets and the show, please go to bsomusic.org. That's bsomusic.org. The brilliant Eric Conway, director of the Morgan State University Choir and chairperson of the university's Fine Arts Department, will be directing the chorus, which takes a huge amount of work. We've been also joined by Colin Lett, who just graduated with a graduate degree, and Leo Hawkins with a bachelor's degree in music here from Morgan State University, who are part of this choir as well. Good to have you all with us in the studio.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
I encourage everyone to see this. This is going to be an amazing night that I don't want to miss either. Thank you all for being here. It's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the way out of here, remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Henry, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our intern is Lala Warshaw. Our theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To podcast our shows and to hear about our guests, the work they do, how to get tickets for shows like this, how to read the report on marijuana arrest we talked about earlier, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen and download all of our podcasts on iTunes now. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Stay tuned now for Michelle Martin and Tell Me More. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.